Hey friends, LDR here, welcoming you back beyond the walls with Team World Vision. This week, we're continuing the conversation about what it looks like to go beyond the walls of racism in America, where I sat down with my new friend and colleague, Chantal Hayes Randall, a brilliant designer, artist, wife, and mother of her two-year-old son, Raiden. But before I share with you the magic of this eye-opening and humbling conversation, I'd like to give some shout-outs to our in-season teams. Can I get some cowbell for our City to the Sea team, our Long Beach Runners, our Twin Cities Conquerors, our Eau Claire and Run for the Hills Halfers, and last but not least, our Chicago Marathoners, who are hitting the pavement once again back where it all started 15 years ago. Welcome, friends. We are so glad that you are here. And now, we want to take a few moments for a couple training tips and some group run guidelines. As we're all in different places across the country, we want to be extremely mindful of the ever-shifting season of concern for public health and the health and safety of our runners. As we begin to gather together for group runs this summer, we want to do so while respecting guidelines, friendly reminders, and recommendations set forth by local governments and the CDC. So number one, there is no pressure to attend a group run. Would you rather stay at home or do your run on your own? That is A-OK. Number two, if you choose to attend a group run, know that the size and etiquette of the gathering will abide by any local guidelines set by local officials. Let's be models of the people who care about others and who will sacrifice our own comfort for the safety of other people. Check your local Facebook groups and emails for all of that specific information from your area director. Number three, say it with me, social distancing. Yes, I know, it will be tempting. When we gather together, we want to be close together. But save those hugs and high fives for later in the season, my friends. Now is the time for that love language called words of affirmation. Number four, BYOF. Bring your own fuel. That's right, to make sure that everyone stays healthy and hydrated, please plan ahead. And number five, while you're at it, don't forget your mask. We really encourage everyone to wear a mask before running. Once you're out there on the move, it's okay to take it off if you want. If you want to keep it on, that's great too. Number six, last but not least, those orange jerseys that you are wearing in the streets of your city are bringing hope with every step you take. So please remember, you're representing World Vision out there on the trail. We are all taking these measures to ensure the safety of our team and those we encounter along the way. We want everyone in attendance to do their best in all of these areas and follow these guidelines so that we are a good witness to one another and all those we pass out on the path. For more details, please go to teamworldvision.org/group run. Thanks in advance. Now, I can't wait to share the conversation Chantal and I had this week. We are two mothers of toddlers just 6 months apart, finding ourselves in the same season of life, yet our circumstances are not the same. The conversation that you're going to listen to today and the episodes that will be shared for the month of June are taking a page from the World Vision Playbook. World Vision is proud to do deep work to tackle the root causes of poverty and injustice worldwide. While World Vision does incredible hardware, gravity-fed pipelines, solar-powered pumps, large-scale irrigation schemes. It begins with the software, the deep cultural and spiritual work within individuals and a community. World Vision doesn't assume to know or understand a community upon entering it, but begins with a posture of listening and learning to build understanding and relationship so that long-lasting, sustainable, transformational work can be done together. So taking a page from the playbook of our brilliant brothers and sisters around the world, we are creating space to listen, learn, and seek understanding from voices of color so that we too can join God in his reconciling work, not just in other countries, but here in the U.S. So Chantal, I'm so interested to hear a little bit about what was stirring in you last week that really prompted you to say,
we need to continue this conversation, and I was honored that you'd want to continue it with me.
Well, Rich Rell said it last week. He said, you know, that God will call each of us to move in a way that will fit our comfort zone, that will fit our hearts, that will fit our passions, that will fit our talents. And it's going to look different for each and every one of us. And as he was saying it, the spark started to come on and something just said deep in my heart, you need to speak on a podcast. But also, you know, LDR, you and I have had a lot of conversations about race. And I think that we've had a lot of beautiful, vulnerable moments. And so I was like, if I had this conversation with anybody, it should absolutely be LDR. So that was the genesis.
The beginning.
The beginning of it all.
It is such an interesting space we're living in right now, because in ways, it's not the culmination of things, but we're part of a story arc, right? A narrative that's been happening clearly for hundreds of years. And I really appreciated that last week too, when Rachel was saying, we all step into this. And I think Tim mentioned it too. We all step into the story at different points in different ways and with our stories, you know, but what does that mean? And where are we going? And are we going together? And are we listening together? And like you said, we've had a lot of really deep conversations in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
Reality, I've actually only been in person with you once.
Literally once.
Yeah, only once. Yeah, I'm honored to be on the journey with you. It's beautiful and so difficult and so complicated. And, you know, you want to do well by one another. We just got a lot of work to do. So Chantal, like over the last couple days, and particularly, I've been thinking about how much our upbringing shape us in nature and nurture and who we are is who God has created us, but that the world seeps into that, right? I mean, all the arguments from a psychology standpoint and whatnot. I've really trying to been rooting through where I'm from and who I am and how that shaped me and brought me to this point. And I was curious, where did you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in a lot of different places, actually. The circumstances of my birth were a little unusual. My dad was very young when I was born. And so I was born to a couple who never really should have been together in the first place. So I spent a little bit of time with him. I spent some time as a baby with my birth mother, my aunt and uncle down in Georgia. And then when I was about a year old, I finally settled in with my grandparents in Texas while my dad went off to, he finished college and went to law school and got his degree. And then when I was about 7, I moved back in with my dad and then my stepmother. And then they got married about a year later, and we were all in Virginia near the Washington, D.C. area. And then I guess when I was 9, we moved back to Texas in Dallas, which is where I stayed until I left for Chicago for college in 2006.
Yeah. D.C. Texas and D.C.
Yeah, but like in the family, like I'm one of the youngest in my generation, and so little Chantal has just kind of lived with everybody. I've been passed from family member to family member, and so my role in the family is a little different than everybody else's because I've stayed with everybody, so I have a really close relationship. And right around the time I got married to my husband, Jesse, I started to realize that my role in the family is truly the connector to try to bring all the different corners of people together. When was the first time that you realized that you were white?
Yeah, such an interesting question. When I think about that, I think about my childhood and that I probably always knew I was white, right? Like I could see that my skin was white. But I think the first definitive moment that there was a juxtaposition of there's white and there's black, and like I was being called out as one, was literally in middle school. You know, you all get lockers in the locker room with like gym class and stuff. And we were all in the locker room and, you know, people are throwing crap around and messing around and you're changing your clothes. And my good friend Shaquita threw a bottle of lotion at me and said, girl, you're ashy. Ashy? Like, what is that? And she was like, well, you're not black, but black people, see, we use lotion, so you're not ashy. And you are ashy, so you need to put the lotion on. Like, she just, like, laid it out to me that, and I have to say, like, I have an older brother and a younger brother, and I'm a tomboy, and I just wanted to be like Mike. Like, my older brother is 5 years older than me. So I can't say that I was awakened to the fact that I needed to pay attention to my skin until Shaquita literally threw a lotion bottle at me and told me about it. And in that moment, there was a clear, like, girl, you need to wake up and pay attention to some things. And in that moment, I knew, like, oh, okay, there's some things that I maybe need to be aware of.
I am laughing so hard over that, because not only did you get read by your friend Shaquita, in a very no-nonsense way, like, why don't you know this?
No, I got educated that day. Hobart Middle School, I was probably 11, and note to self. But I mean, I grew up in a smattering of ethnicity, and we all, that was the life, that was the city, that was the way. But I would say in middle school, those were the moments that really started opening my eyes to the world's awareness of race and difference, instead of maybe people being unique. When I hit middle school, I mean, middle school is eye-opening for a lot of reasons. Yeah. But I think those were the moments that I was introduced to a new reality. So when did you first realize that you were black?
Yeah, so I was about 4 or 5. It was one of my earliest memories. And I remember I was swimming with my grandma at like the Y. We were coming out of the locker room and a little girl like stopped me, stood right in front of me. And she was like, what are you? And I was so confused as to what she was referring to. I was like, I don't. Like, and she was very, very, very insistent. Like, what are you? And she's like, are you white? Are you black? And I had no clue of these concepts that she was speaking to me. It was like she was speaking Greek. And my grandmother's with me, and she's like, you're black, baby. And I was like, okay. And I told her, and she still looked really confused. But I didn't even know what white or black or anything was, so I couldn't understand why she was confused, and we just went off about our merry way. But that was probably the first time I definitively realized that I was black, or at least had it told to me, and it, you know. But it didn't make any sense, because everybody in my family are different shades of brown. So my grandmother is like chocolate brown, and my dad is like very, very, very light-skinned. And, you know, I have aunts and uncles who are every shade in between. And then my stepmother is super, super dark, and her skin is also gorgeous. So, you know, to me, it didn't really make sense of black or white or anything like that. I was just like, what are you talking about? The next significant moment I remember is trying to find my color in the Crayola box. And I was like 6 or 7 maybe. And like everybody had figured it out, right? Like the white kids had peach, they were set. Like the black kids had brown or mahogany and they were good. And I really struggled to find my skin color. And I remember like having just a complete breakdown with my grandmother. And finally she went and bought me one of those 64 crayon color boxes, which are gorgeous, by the way, so many colors, so beautiful. And we finally sat there, sifted through all the colors and picked out my color together. And I am tan, y'all.
That's what I'm talking about.
But that's when I started to learn about the nuance of what it means having to try to find a category for yourself that the world was telling you that you needed to fit into that you didn't understand. I think there's something there about middle school, that 11, 12, 13 age, that is such a social awakening for a person. You know, middle school for pretty much everybody is a very traumatic period of time for all of the reasons. You have hormones, boys, girls, all thrown together, new schools, it's crazy. But, you know, for me, I remember that was like the beginning, I think, of a real identity crisis I started to go through. Because in middle school, I started to realize that there were Black and there was white and there was expectations for each, and I fit into none of them. And then it became a quest of whose friends do you want to be? What social group do you want to be? Whose popularity is tied to what friend group, and who are you going to be? So I would make Black friends, and, you know, they would absolutely tease me and exclude me and all sorts of things for being too light-skinned or too white, and telling me that I'm acting too white because I spoke properly or whatever. And that's a horrible thing that the Black community has to deal with as far as our own education and internalized racism. But then I also hear the same thing from white people. It's just from a different lens. It's just like, oh, aren't you so articulate? So it's the same statements being thrown against you in two different ways, and you don't quite know which one to be. And then I'm also a light-skinned Black woman who grew up, who looks mixed to the world, but I grew up in a Black household. So I had the world telling me that, like, well, you really aren't Black, you know, and my family is Black. I'm at the cookout. I have all the references. I'm listening to gospel music and cleaning my house every Saturday. What do you mean I'm not Black? I have a headscarf. And so then I had a very deep 3-year period in which I tried to prove my Blackness. You know, I listened to all the rap music. I knew all the dances. I was trying to fit in with the Black kids as much as I could, and I just couldn't. And I remember one day climbing on the school bus, and one Black girl clapped at me, and I couldn't figure out why she was clapping. And she went clap, clap. And I was like, what is going on? And she says, I'm trying to turn off that light. Clap on, clap off. And that moment shifted my thinking to, okay, well, if this is how Black people see me, well, then I'm just going to be friends with the white people. So then I went to a complete opposite switch and tried to completely deny everything that I could think of that was stereotypically Black in my life. So then I would change, no more rap music, it's all Good Charlotte and Blink 182. My hair has to be straight, you know, my clothes have to be different. Everything has to change. My friends group started to switch and sway. And I found that I was friends with both groups, but I just didn't know who I should be in that. And it really didn't honestly balance out until college, and maybe even after, when I really started to be introduced into deep work about internalized racism from a pastor of mine at a church. But it just proves to show, you know, color and race is not nearly so simple as we are painting it out to be. It is so complex, and it is affecting each one of us, white, Black, and everything in between, in very profound, significant, and sometimes traumatic ways. I think a lot of people, particularly white people right now, are hungry for resources and learning. And while there is 1,000 ways to get them, I do have a short list of resources that you can watch or read or listen to that will just kind of help jumpstart your education and path to be an anti-racist, if that's something that you're interested in. As well as just further educating yourself if you're interested in deconstructing internalized racism and learning more about the history of this country and how it was set up only to serve some and not all. Mm-hmm.
Can you, before you give us that list, because I want the list, and I love how it is the books, it is the podcast, like it is the for your viewing pleasure, like you're hitting all the lines of communication depending on your learning. So, but what you just said a minute ago is if you want to be an anti-racist. And that's a newer term, I think, to some folks. I would just say a lot of folks in the country who are waking up to the racial injustices. Can you just break down that term for us real quick? Anti-racist. What does that mean?
Sure. Here we go. Anti-racist. Noun. A person who opposes racism and promotes racial tolerance. I am going to challenge that and say, and promotes racial justice. You know, I think racial tolerance is too weak of a word. I think a true anti-racist is a person who vehemently and completely opposes racism and promotes racial justice.
So in the midst of that, so for this, that's a new concept to some of us, to probably many of us, why is it not enough to just not be racist? Why is being an anti-racist really the key? So what I'm understanding is like, to be not racist isn't actually the opposite side of racist. Mm-hmm. We need anti-racist. We need true allies in this movement, in this journey. So what would you say to somebody that's like anti-racist? Well, I'm not racist. What would you say in that?
Yeah, I think just being not racist is, to simply put, it's the passive way of doing things, right? And it's also, I'm going to challenge some people here, an easy way out, right? Mm-hmm. If you're passive, you don't have to do anything, you're on the fence. I'm not actively contributing to racism. Well, you're not actively contributing to dismantling racism either. And as MLK says, your silence is complicit. So, you know, I think that being an anti-racist is more of a verb of action. And it is not only a noun, it is also a verb. I should emphasize that. It is a being, it is a doing, it is an actively pursuing and educating and speaking rather than just not being racist, which you can do that at home from your couch and not say a word.
Right. And whether that be in conversations with your family members, with your friends, in your community, on your Instagram, in your school systems, right? Like being an anti-racist could look very different for different people in different places. But what I'm hearing you say, it is the choice and the action,
yes,
to promote racial justice in life for the long term.
And it's not just something that you can arrive to, right? You can't just wake up tomorrow and be like, great, I'm anti-racist, we're done. It is ongoing, it is dismantling. And, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, you know, as a African-American, I still have so much work of my own to do against internalized racism. And that will be a lifelong journey for me. Mm-hmm. So we all have to kind of strap in for the long haul, because this is not going to be something that's solved overnight. We are literally dismantling half a century's worth of programming about people who have been quote unquote considered equal for less than 100 years. So this is going to take some work.
And you said you don't just arrive at anti-racist. I appreciate that. You don't just arrive there. There's got to be some work to be done. And where would you say people should start?
I would start with the resources.
Like you're saying, this is a trending topic right now, so anybody can Google these things, and they're easily at your fingertips. You don't have to ask a Black friend about being anti-racist, but right now, I am going to ask you, as my friend, to please humbly educate us, because you have done the work, and I've been doing my own work. Will you share the ones that you've got with us, so that we can, so some of us can start on the journey? Some of us can continue on the journey, or others could share these with others, family and friends.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know that I like to digest media in a lot of different ways, or that some people are more visual learners or they're more auditory learners. So I wanted to make sure that we hit all ends of the spectrum. But as far as movies, 13th by Ava DuVernay is a fantastic documentary. Yes, have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. It is, yeah. I mean, for some of our white friends that are listening right now, maybe nothing new to you. It might also, you might find your jaw dropping and you might be starting to ask some questions. Oh, well, this is a documentary. Was this framed this way or was that this? I really encourage everybody listening, try to just take a step back and don't let those questions block what you're seeing. Just approach it with curiosity and openness, because it is an eye-opening, incredible documentary.
And all of these books are, I would say, required watching, reading, listening for if you're white or black. I mean, learning new things every single day about the history of this country and the legacy that my own ancestors had to endure and also flourished in. So that's a very, very good start. When you're done with 13th, I highly recommend that you watch When They See Us by Ava DuVernay. It is a wonderful piece that I always recommend back to back from 13th, because I think it really drives home the documentary in a concrete way that weaves in storytelling and emotion, and you really start to follow these characters who are not only just characters, by the way, this is based off of a real life situation that happened.
1999, right?
Central Park Five. I encourage you to give that a watch. The Hate U Give is another resource that is fantastic. I think last time I saw it was on Hulu. It is also a movie. An American Son with Kerry Washington. And that's
also
on-
The Hate U Give, though, that one is a YA lit book.
Yes. So yes, it is.
Read that. So anybody that has any teenagers or preteens, I mean, read it. We read it beforehand or read it with your child. But that is a great book. I used to be a middle school teacher, so I'm just throwing out, like, that's a book that you can read with your kids.
American Son is also really, really great, and of course very close to my heart, because their son is a mixed race boy, and so there is a lot of argument that mixed kids manage to make it out of somehow of this white supremacist system that we have set up. And American Son really paints how that is just not true, and also it paints how sometimes young black men in this country are already found guilty before they've even done anything at all. If you're looking for books, The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. It is a fantastic book about mass incarceration and the prison pipeline in our country, and how we are using prisons as just a new form of slavery and free labor for our corporations. White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism by Robin DiAngelo. Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates is another fantastic read. That one I still think of pretty much every single day of my life. I think of some excerpt from that book. It is a letter from Coates to his son about navigating this world as a black man. And it is an incredibly powerful and also a very short read. So you can get it done in an afternoon. This next book has been completely instrumental in how I think about race and internalized racism in my life. Completely has, it kicked the door open and shone a very bright, ugly flashlight in all of the generational trauma that slavery has brought to our families in ways that has been perpetuated in my family line that I'm still doing with my son today. But thankfully, she also gives you the tools to break it. And sometimes just hearing the line of where these stories come from is helpful. This is Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Dr. Joy DeGruy. I highly recommend it for everybody, white and black, but it will break your heart wide open in the best way. And then for the final book recommendation is Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria and Other Conversations About Race by Beverly Daniel Tatum. I don't really think that needs much more explanation, because we've all asked that question, but this book will dive right into it. For podcasts, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably like to listen to your content. So I wanted to make sure that we didn't leave that audience behind. Code Switch is a fantastic podcast about the different worlds that we live in and how, you know, the universe of an African-American, while it is in parallel existence with the universe of a white American, they actually are wildly different, and why an African American has to literally code switch to survive, to get through life every day. 1619, which is a Smithsonian documentary teamed up with the New York Times that goes into the history and legacy of slavery. And they go in, y'all. They go in. I often can't make it past a whole episode. So still processing, talking about how much work, how far we've come and how much work we still have to do. And the final podcast is done by a dear friend of mine, Melinda Hale, called We Need to Talk. I think sometime around Eric Garner's murder, she came up with this podcast to just bring together different voices to talk about race and the climate in America. And she has such a wonderful voice and view of seeing the world that I think everybody should listen to. And honestly, picking up one of those books, watching one of those movies, or listening to one of those podcasts will make a world of a difference in your understanding.
And instead of people thinking that they need to be able to check off all the boxes on just pick up one book, just listen to one podcast.
Because it can feel overwhelming. You know, it can feel, especially right now with, I feel like there's a social climate in demand of, what are you doing to educate yourself about anti-racism? And that can be very scary and overwhelming for anyone. And so I would absolutely recommend just start with one thing. And you might find that your interest is piqued and that you might naturally want to move on to the next piece. It doesn't all have to feel like schoolwork.
And no matter what happens this year, next year's still coming. And are we still going to do the work?
Yeah.
And demand the justice and create the future and the reality that we want for our kids.
I think going back to what you said, LDR, about how we each have a story and where our story falls into the arc of humankind or even the history of this country and how we're only a small part of it. I think of this country and our lives and it as just a big tapestry and our little thread. And, you know, the tapestry, when you step back, is so beautiful and you understand the whole point of it all. But while you're in it and in your little tiny thread being sewn, it feels like chaos. It feels like pain. It feels like disaster. But I know that in the arc of humankind, that there is something really powerful coming out of this point in history. I really do think we're going to call it the second civil rights movement in like my son's history books, you know, I really think that. And so as we're at that crux, I think about all those black and white pictures you see and you wonder, well, I wouldn't have done that. Or I wouldn't have, you know, I would have said something or I wouldn't have let that happen because this is so horrible. And now we're in it. You know, how do we make the little children that were so outraged when we learned about this stuff in seventh grade, how do we make them proud? But I guess like my biggest question is, as we look to the future and our kids, right, they are the biggest impact that we can possibly have. How do you raise your kids in this on both sides, as a black mother in this climate and as a white mother in this climate? There's so many things to navigate and it's so complex and you don't want to scar your kids by, you know, exposing them to the horrors of the world too early. But at the same time, you know, at least on my end, my child's survival depends on it.
There's Raiden right there. That's what I'm talking about. But you waving.
Oh. Hey, buddy. So Raiden decided he wanted to be a part of the podcast, huh? What do you think? We need Raiden and Thea on here to have their own podcast.
We do. What they think. We do.
Hi.
Yeah. Hey, Raiden. How are you? How are you? I love that smile.
What a moment to be alive. Back then is now. And right now, we have the opportunity to build a better future for children worldwide. Thank you for moving your feet for the fullness of life. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast. We'll see you next week.